Bob Crowe, the leader of the RMT union, died early yesterday morning, aged 52, of a heart attack. His union, which fights for the rights of transport workers across the nation, paid tribute to one of the strongest and most successful union leaders the country has ever seen. Bob Crowe was a man who went against the tide and was always prepared to stand up and fight for the underdog. Under his leadership, membership of the RMT union increased by more than 20,000 to 80,000, making it Britain's fastest growing union. Bob Crowe was an internationalist who supported the struggle of workers worldwide, whether in Palestine or Iraq. He had been campaigning for the No to EU political party in May's European elections and was preparing to stand as a candidate for a party he believed would represent workers suffering because of EU policies. As a tribute to him, we invite you to watch Bob Crowe's final major interview. With me is Bob Crowe, the General Secretary of the RMT Union. Welcome.
Good morning.
Well, thank you for inviting us into your office's historic place, RMT headquarters. You may have been successful about getting negotiations and so on started again in London, but what about a failure, perceived failure of you being able to unite other unions against austerity, against the policies of both Labour and Tory parties?
Well, it's not for me to unite other unions. My job is to unite my own membership, but work with other unions. That's what we try to do. The TUC is the overall body that's responsible for organising the trade union movement in Britain. My job is to try and give as much help as I can to other trade unions. But we don't interfere in other trade unions' affairs. How another trade union wants to operate is a matter for them, and we respect their views. All we do is any help that we can give them that we give.
As someone who represents thousands of people, and you've seen how Labour under Blair and Brown, you're seeing Cameron and Clegg now, are you surprised that more unions are not realising that the Labour Party doesn't support their interests, workers' interests in this country?
Well, I don't think the Labour Party does look after the interests of working people at all. When you look at the Conservatives, Liberals and Labour, I accept that minute policy there is difference, but in the major policies, they're all the same. They all support keeping the anti-trade union laws. They all support privatisation. They all want to stay in the European Union. And they've all supported the legal wars around the world. When you look at all them four policies, all those three major parties could come into a coalition together and would have no problem. They all united to make sure that if Scotland gets independence, then they can't have the pound. So they've got a lot more in common than they've got against each other, to be fair.
But why do you think unions aren't inspired by the RMT and other unions that are trying a different path?
Well, I think people move at different times. Our union formed the Labour Party over 100 years ago. It was our union that moved the resolution to form a party of Labour.
Around this table?
Around this table. I mean, this table's been here since the inception of the union over 120 years ago. There's people up here, for example, who were presidents of the union who weren't presidents when the actual Labour Party were formed. We used to be affiliated to the Liberal Party, along with the miners, because the Liberal Party was a party of working people. And then these people and the people they represented recognised the fact that they had to change society. Because every time there was an economic blip, all of the conditions they had won when things were good, then the governments and the employers took them all back off them. So that's why they wanted a socialist society. And that's what's enshrined in my union's rule book.
So Ed Miliband has been very silent, the present leader of the Labour Party, certainly in this latest dispute you're involved in and the TSSA is involved in. Why do you think they've been so silent?
Some Labour MPs have been very helpful, very supportive. There's been others, I've got to say, diabolical. I mean, the deputy leader of the Labour Party, Harriet Harman, said that she would like to knock me and Boris Johnson's head together like we was two school kids. I mean, whose side is she on? I've had a letter from a former Fire Brigade union official who was a Labour minister, Jim Fitzpatrick, condemning us for going on strike. At the end of the day, when it comes to a strike, it's whose side are you on? There's no about I'm sitting on the fence. You're either supporting the workers in struggle or you're supporting the employer.
Do you think they know they've got a landslide and they just want to disassociate themselves from anything that certainly the right-wing press might pick on?
Yes, I think they treat the trade union movement like a concrete necklace around its neck. He doesn't want to be associated with us.
And yet it keeps giving them money.
Well, the majority of trade unions affiliated to the TUC are not affiliated to the Labour Party. And we've got some great Labour MPs, but they're in a minority. But the actual party itself, we as a trade union can't give money to them nationally when their policies are totally against what our union stands for. For example, Labour was the ones that privatised the infrastructure on London's tubes. It was Labour that done it. It was John Prescott that said he wanted the first private finance initiative to operate on London Underground. And we're not going to give money to people out there that are going to put the boot into us. We want to give money to those MPs that roll their sleeves up and fight for us in Parliament and fight for us in the communities.
Now, when the media covers policy issues, of course, it does go straight to talking about individuals very often, certainly in disputes. How do you think the character assassination of you has been as compared with previous disputes you've had with management?
Well, it was a massive character assassination of me, and I think it all backfired. I think in the end, I started getting sympathy. I mean, I never had so many Valentine's Day cards this year than I've ever had before. What we've got is so much social media now. People are making their own news. They're making their own news channels. They're getting news out there to people for all different kinds of various reasons. And it ain't just as simple now as someone just putting a headline on a newspaper. And to be honest with you, the newspapers are discredited with what took place in the Leveson inquiry and what's taking place now with the hacking. It's in such a state now that a lot of people have got total contempt for some of the newspapers.
That trial, of course, continues. One person who personalises politics particularly well, arguably, is Boris Johnson. Do you think he has come out better out of what's been going on, or do you think he's taken a knock because, you know, his media profile is this lovable buffoon? He, against all odds, became mayor in the first place.
Well, if I expressed the individual view, people would say, but he would say that, wouldn't he? But talking to individuals, just people in the street since the dispute, it's my view that he's come out of it pretty damned. He's been damaged as a result of this. And I was reading the editorial of the Times newspaper yesterday, the so-called broadsheet for the Tory party, who said that Boris Johnson bottled it. That's the Times newspaper.
That's the fight between the Prime Minister and Boris.
Who will be looking to support whoever for the next Prime Minister. Because, I mean, there's a battle going on between the Tories. I mean, Cameron hates Boris's guts, and Boris hates Cameron's guts, and they're both making out they want to out-left the other. In a sense of the word, they want to bring policies in, which would be to the left, or even to the right, to try and win over certain factions of the Conservative Party. And they've ended up in an absolute state.
When it comes back to the disputes in London, how unsafe do you really think transportation in London will become if they do close so many ticket offices?
Well, if you take 1,000 people from a company, that's not declining, which is a going in improvement. I mean, this is a company that's a success story. It's moving more people than ever before. All the forecasters are saying that it's going to grow and grow and grow. If you take 1,000 people out, there's 1,000 people less that can support those groups of workers who are travelling when they need it. For example, when the vicious terrorist attacks took place on Britain, it was those same people in those booking offices that went down the tunnels to help the maimed. There were the same people that calmed people down. There was the same people that got people evacuated. Cutting doesn't mean efficiency. Sometimes you improve the services and it actually makes you more efficient because more people use the service and people get a better value for money, commuter route journey.
But why are these ideas? I mean, I know you'll immediately go back to a grand narrative of history. It's one step back to. It's not. You would have thought after the failure of the Labour Party under Gordon Brown, it would be more on the stage, political stage.
Well, sometimes the politicians get the message last. Sometimes they're the real last people to actually get the message. But the people out there on the street, you know, I think myself asked for pretty simple things, really. They ask for a job with decent pay. They ask for a house to live in. They ask for their kids to have good education. They ask that the pensioners are looked after with dignity and respect. And they don't want a war. And what they want is a decent national health service. Now, those things are the key issues, I think, that the public want. All those things are easy to say in an interview, hard to achieve, because every single one of them, the establishment want to make a profit from. Every single one of them. And therefore, there comes a crunch between privatisation and Labour, basically. If the privateers are stronger with their views, they will obtain bigger concessions for their elite. And if the working class, through their organisations, become strong, they can get concessions at the expense of the political elite. And therefore, that's why we've got to be organised. That's why James Connolly was saying the same thing over 100 years ago, is that until we actually take control of the commanding heights of society and our industries, until we have a say over those people that work in it and how they operate it, we will constantly be in a situation of cut, boom, gloom, boom and cut. We are European, pro-European. We support European people, but we're against the European Union, the actual body, which has got nothing to do with European people, and we're for supporting people worldwide. A problem to a worker in China is a problem for us. I've got more in common with a Chinese labourer than I have with a City of London stockbroker. And hence the reason why the European Union is the driving force to privatise utilities, smash the welfare state, privatise the National Health Service, and to bring laws in which restrict the right for workers to take strike action.
Bob Crowe, thank you.
Thank you.